Previously on No Reserves Radio.
Oh my God, Angelo, come on, have some self-respect. The Eagles can't hurt you if you don't constantly pander to them.
Here's the biggest indictment of Dame that I can say. Dame has been so like off this year that Ren went on live air and said Jalen Brunson deserved an all-star start over him.
You are now Angelo DiDeLulo.
Do you think it is possible that the management of the Memphis Grizzlies are just buying into the reckless youth movement and they got rid of the one person in the locker room that probably was telling Ja to knock it off?
Because he's taken advantage of me multiple times when I was younger. That sounded bad. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're correct in that assessment.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of No Reserves Radio. We're doing this kind of late, so this might be a flash episode. Alex, 9 passes completed for your child, and you want to sit here and brag? What happened to Caleb Williams and what happened to Anthony Richardson, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? And yeah, we're starting off with the good questions, I see. One of them lost the game by 2, while the other QB got basically bailed on 2 interceptions. One of them, the DB, just barely overstepped out of bounds when coming down with the pick. The other one was canceled due to a penalty, and they lost by 2. So if one of those happens to be a turnover, they probably win that game.
Alex was like, surely CJ Stroud's luck can't continue, and then week 1 happens. He must have been so disappointed.
I mean, yeah. Apparently that guy has some sort of, like, lucky charm
Juju
or whatever.
Juju Mugambo.
Must have been. And yet, like, you speak of the 9 passes, yet my
9
guy...
Completions. Yep.
9 completions, yeah. 9 completions. Yet my guy, and I want to give you the exact number, so I'm opening up the game here. Yet my guy ended up with 212 yards. Your guy ended up with 234 yards. Your guy was playing versus a defense that probably wouldn't be like great for like SEC, for example. So yeah, like congrats. My guy was actually playing a good defense. He got 212 yards on 9 completions.
He got 212 yards on like 3 passes.
Yes. Okay. Okay, let me put it like this. There's some bad, there's some good. Like, he missed Adonai Mitchell, basically.
Stop it!
Like,
he was atrocious! Oh my God. He was atrocious.
He was atrocious, yet he made the best pass that you'll see the whole season.
The Colts literally just had a running game and then prayed that Anthony Richardson made a good deep throw. And he made 3 good ones. I'll give him that. He made 3, probably one of the best throws I've seen in a long, long time. The one to Alec Pierce.
That is probably the best throw that I've seen in the last 4 years.
But at the same time,
there's a rest of the game to be played, Alex,
and he didn't play in it.
Just before you go, you mentioned that they had a running game and then they had Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson.
No, they had Anthony Richardson making 3 passes after the running game.
Okay,
and Anthony Richardson was part of the running game.
In the running game, they had 48 yards from 1 Jonathan Taylor. That's their running game outside of Anthony Richardson. That's it. So their running game mustered 48 yards. The Texans' running game mustered nearly 200 yards. So Joe Mixon accounted for 159 of those. And then, like, if you add up Stephon Diggs, CJ Stroud, Tank Dell, Damian Pierce, who all got carries, that's basically, like, another 40 yards or more. So, yeah, they had
one,
over
well,
200.
One of those guys had a quarterback who could make an intermediate throw and not just a deep throw or nothing, and one of them didn't. So,
again.
It's kind of hard to get your running game going when your quarterback can't make a 5-yard slant. So, I'm just saying, like, at that point, you might as well just bring everyone up close and then, like, have the other guys deep and then force them to beat you deep. I'm just saying, like...
Again, just before you go all nuts, you're talking about a guy who just played in his fifth career start, who is, if I'm not mistaken, the youngest QB in the league.
So why is it only his fifth career start, Alex?
Yeah, because he got hurt last season.
Did he get hurt this week?
I thought he would immediately get hurt. I was under the impression that his play style isn't sustainable. Yet he got 6 carries, 56 yards. He bouldered 1 touchdown in. Did not get hurt whatsoever. So apparently that narrative is sort of dead.
After one game, he played in 5. Oh my god!
But I was told he would get hurt immediately. Because, like, his playstyle just isn't sustainable. So he would get hurt immediately. You told me basically that.
Tell me how we're feeling week 8. That's all I want to know.
Okay, let's put it like that.
Week 8 update. Give me a week 8
update.
So
they lost by 2 points versus the darling of the NFL. With a defense
the
that
darling
is basically
of the NFL.
I mean, they are the darling of the NFL. Like, they are the superpower Texans who came out of nowhere last season. They have the young QBs in every single one of those Micah Parsons podcasts, just speaking to the media. Just they are the darling of the NFL, like the new darling. So, like, the Chiefs are now the bad boys, and in the AFC, they're probably like the new darling of the league. They have an all-star team, almost. Like, they had a Joe Mixon, they still have Stephon Diggs, they still have Tank Dell, Nico Collins, they have all of those guys. On defense, they added a bunch of pieces as well, starting by Daniil Hunter, for example. And yet, my guy lost by 2, without a defense. That's impressive.
This is the fantasy episode, so I'm just gonna say, if you were considering Anthony Richardson over CJ Stroud, you're wrong.
No, you did well, because Anthony Richardson had 27.08 fantasy points. CJ saw that 18.66. So you were correct. Anthony Richardson is indeed a better fantasy QB than CJ Stroud. Yet he had only 9 completions. He had the same amount of touchdowns. He did have 1 pick, but he made up for it in a touchdown that he ran in and the 56 yards. So you are indeed correct. We are talking about fantasy football, and Anthony Richardson is indeed the better QB out of the two, for fantasy football especially. Moving on, as you said, Angelo, I guess we can talk about your guy.
My guy.
What happened to Will Levis, though? I was under the impression he would be good.
I mean, at least he could make a 5-yard slant and had the balls to try and win a game.
Oh, okay. Do you know who are the worst 3 QBs in terms of EPA per play to start the season?
I'm guessing Caleb Williams is on there.
No, he's not, actually. He's not. The 3 worst QBs in terms of EPA per play so far in this passes? Season are... No, he completed enough passes. He just isn't as, like, shit, that's your guy. So the bottom 3 are Daniel Jones, Deshaun Watson, and Will Levis. So congrats. Your QB is so great. That interception is just like chef kiss of what I've always said about Will Levis. Like, sure, he has a great arm, whatever. He can make those good throws. When the pressure comes to him, his awareness is like minus 1,000. What the heck is that pass?
That first touchdown, though, that was a pretty pass.
Great. I'm sure the Titans are excited because of that first touchdown and that first loss as well. Isn't it? Like, yeah, my guy had like 90 yards passing, sure. Like, it's far from the best, like, debut for QB ever.
It looked like Justin Fields!
Now, because he did not commit the turnovers. So he did not cost the team the game, like his other guy that used to play with.
His offense didn't score.
He scored 2 points because they had a 2-point conversion.
Fuck off.
Hey, that's more points than Justin Fields scored this past week. Yeah, Justin Fields didn't score any. But I did want to say, so just like, so the first stat that I mentioned was EPA per play. The lowest total EPA among quarterbacks in week 1. starting from the worst one, which was Bo Nix, minus 23. Now, of course, he had less plays, or he had more plays, so the EPA per play is a bit better than the other guys. Then you have Daniel Jones. Then the third worst is Will Levis. So your guy is actually worse than Deshaun Watson, Bryce Young, and your QB, Joe Burrow, in terms of total EPA among starting QBs in week one. That's just great, huh? And speaking of your guy...
Let's talk about some risers and some fallers. Do you think Caleb Williams, like, is spot is like freeform crashing at this point after that game? Do you think that there's people who are going to sell after that game?
In Dynasty, I don't think so. Like, it's his first start. I'm sure that people will be patient. The hype that to do that. I mean, people are still patient with Trevor Lawrence, and we're on year five of him being straight down average. So I'm at least expecting that people have some more sense of a, like, holding and seeing Caleb. For redraft, I wouldn't be surprised if people are fast on moving from him. He was drafted as a top 15 QB. I mean, it could happen. Like, he...
It's his rookie
I think
year,
the
dude.
Offense... It's his rookie know. Year, sure. I think the dude will develop. Like, this is not what we're going to see the whole season, in my opinion.
I mean, I would hope not.
Yeah, I too would hope
He's
not.
Like Justin Fields without the legs. That's an even worse Justin Fields, Alex.
It is. If that's the case, yeah, that's terrible. If that's what you're going to have. But I do expect him to improve. I mean, it's his first start. So I do expect him to improve somewhat. The run game, DeAndre Swift was okay. They split the targets between DJ Moore, Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen did seem a bit more like a safety valve for him than I was expecting. I was expecting him to focus more on DJ Moore, maybe use the tight ends more. And no, like, he did use Keenan Allen quite a bit. Another surprising thing that I did see is that Gerald Everett outsnapped Cole Kmet. And as I talked about during the preseason, they were both, like, fairly involved in terms of snaps. Cole Kmet had 27 snaps. Gerald Everett had 34
That's
snaps.
That's kind of crazy. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. And, like, for example, Keenan Allen had 38 snaps. I do think he missed a few due to an injury because he was the third wide receiver in terms of snap. Rome had 43 snaps played. But I do believe Keenan missed a few due to, like, a recurring injury that he's been having for a bit. But now Rome Odunze has been is having an MRI on his knee, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's what Eberflus reported this afternoon. So that's something to monitor as well, because if Rome is out and like his reporting on the news did not seem like the happiest. He didn't say a whole lot. He said that he could not. It basically like I cannot confirm or deny type of scenario. He said that he had no information, so he did not know how severe it was. But that's something to monitor for sure, because I do think that Keenan Allen might be a bit of a riser here, at least in my eyes. If we expect this offense to do at least a bit better, I think he was being drafted low, and I think he's going to have some good value. Like, he dropped a touchdown, basically.
That's kind of the thing, like, if we want to talk about free-falling, I think DeAndre Swift is he's free-falling at this point. Because if the offense can't be this bad, continually. If the offense is this bad continually, Chicago's just fucking cursed at this point. But even so, I think it's really obvious that we were overdrafting, at least in redraft, we were overdrafting Caleb Williams and we were overdrafting DeAndre Swift, and we may have even been overdrafting DJ Moore. I do think you're right. Keenan Allen might be the only one out of all the Bears' weapons that might have a little bit of security on him because he was the odd man out. But yeah, the Bears offense, and we've said this going into the season, you know, we are drafting these guys as if they're guaranteed to be in the top five offense, and it's still a rookie quarterback, and that's not a guarantee. And right now they look closer to bottom five than top five. So
yeah, I do think this could be like a buying opportunity if this does continue, because again, I think this offense will look better as the weeks go on. And like, if we have another, like their next matchup is at Houston, then they go at Indianapolis. I think if they lay another dud at Houston, I could see them maybe having a bounce back versus Indy, because as I mentioned, like the defense is really soft right now for Indianapolis. Then they have the Los Angeles Rams. Then they have Carolina again. So they could have a good like two game stretch here between week three and week five.
Speaking of the fucking Rams, Cooper Kupp 21 targets was not on my bingo card. Puka Nacua going down was also not on the bingo card though either.
Yeah, and I just got news from this. Puka Nacua aggravated his summer knee injury, so that was the big concern. Yeah, he's still going through additional testing, but he is expected to be considered week to week for sources. Like week to week to me is usually like you're gonna miss at least like 2-3 weeks. But it's like they will just report that you're basically sitting out on practices. So I would expect him to miss at least 2-3.
Depending on how bad it is, even if he does come back, you're saying he might not be 100%, or they might even be debating shelving him for the season. Knees are not to be trifled with, dude. Like
it always depends on how the season goes. Like, mm-hmm. If they see, like, let's say the additional testing comes out and it's not as serious as it looks, it's just some discomfort or something like that, and they are winning because, like, it looked, like, I guess we'll talk about that game later, but it looked to
we'll
me...
We'll talk about the game on the Friday episode, or on the Thursday episode.
Or but it did look to me like I called the demise of the Rams a bit too soon, because they still look pretty good. Sure.
I'm gonna say demise of the Rams. The Rams looked fucking awesome. Until Puka went down, I was feeling really good about that prediction. Like ass.
If you remember, like during the preseason, we had this discussion where you said that like while Stafford is there, it's hard for anyone to doubt him. And I was sort of trying to doubt them. I had them. I expected them to miss the playoffs. No, I don't know if it's like. If now that they're one-dimensional, just Kupp, because again, as you mentioned, like 20 targets for Kupp, it's insane. Now that they are one-dimensional at wide receiver, and like, could this be that they are that good as they showed, or is it just a mix of the Lions' defense being so bad? But because they did look like that first...
The Lions upgraded the defense every step of the way in the offseason. I'm telling you. The Rams just took what might be an NFC conference championship team to like the brink. I'm telling you, I don't believe in good losses, but if there's such a thing as a good loss, that was a good loss. I'm just saying.
It could be. I think the defense isn't as good as we were expecting for the Lions.
For the Lions, that's for sure.
I was talking about the Lions. Like, I think it's going to be a mix of they looked very good, but I think part of the reason why they looked so good was the Lions' defense was very soft, and now without Puka, maybe they become too one-dimensional, and it becomes hard for them to achieve the heights that maybe we could be expecting after seeing that game, week one game.
We'll see. Like I said, I'm not betting against him as long as Matthew Stafford is still standing. And Sean McVay is on that sideline.
The other games, though, I think one that we definitely do need to talk about in terms of like fantasy implications is probably the Packers-Eagles one. Jordan Love going down with the injury. It's looking like 3 to 6 weeks right now. I've heard some more optimistic reports that are saying closer to 3 to 4. So likely not a season ender from what I've heard in regards to the knee and the MCL. It looked gruesome, but like those cases of that injury in specific, when the QB comes back, it does not awfully impact their throwing ability, just the mobility a bit. So like, I could see, he's not like a Lamar, Anthony, Richardson, Justin Fields, not those type of guys. He's more of a Dak Prescott that just runs on occasion, basically. So I think the offense, if he's going to be out only like 3-4 weeks, probably isn't affected all that much. But for those 3 or 4 weeks, who do you even start?
Not only did Jordan Love go out, but that, so let's talk about this. The Packers wide receiver group. I don't think necessarily that there was a standout guy as far as volume goes. Obviously, Jaden Reed had the best game. That's not up for debate. But like, if they're still running their offense by spreading the ball around like that, who do you put in when it's not Jordan Love in there? Is there even a startable Packers player now?
I would think that the only guy that is Josh Jacobs. Yeah, I would say either Jacobs or both, I guess. I would say Jacobs is still a starter. Probably takes a thing in terms of, like, his ceiling. Like, I think his floor is still basically the same, but his ceiling, I do not see it because I do not think they will be able to sustain enough drives with Malik Willis, because I think Malik Willis is terrible, to make Josh Jacobs that much viable. Now, I think Jaden Reed is actually quite interesting, even with Malik Willis, purely because, like, this could sound a bit controversial, but yes, he's the only guy that is close enough to, like, a Deebo Samuel in terms of his usage around the league, in which he is, like, that dynamic playmaker that can make plays when he gets the ball in his hands in terms of yaks. He's used in the running game as well. So I definitely think Jaden Reed is still quite usable for fantasy, purely because he will not depend a whole lot on Malik Willis doing a lot of plays. Now, for example, a guy like Christian Watson, which will depend on, like, Malik Willis sitting in the pocket, finding the open play deep, getting to the end zone and being used at that red zone threat, or a guy like Romeo Doubs, who is used to get the underneath stuff and whatnot. I think those guys will definitely be fairly impacted. While Jaden Reed, I think he has a lot of standalone value that does not completely inches on the QB playing. Now, he's, again, much like Jacobs, his ceiling is limited in terms of what he can do because touchdowns are still king. But I still think his floor is going to be quite high.
I could see
that. There was one, like, Packers thing here that really caught my eye. Tucker Kraft out-targeting Luke Musgrave, out-snapping Luke Musgrave, even though Tucker Kraft was out for a good portion of the practice training camp, my bad, because he hurt his arm in a wedding or something like that. He's now 100% back, and again, much like I always said, I think Tucker Kraft is a better player than Luke Musgrave. And the games that Luke Musgrave missed last season, and Tucker Kraft was just getting that connection with Jordan Love. So I think when Love is back, I really like Tucker Kraft rest of season in terms of like Tucker Kraft or Luke Musgrave. I'm still Team Kraft, man.
See it. So, week one's in the books. I know it's not, you know, you don't want to, overreact, but so is Malik Nabbers now ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. in your dynasty rankings? I'm just curious.
I wouldn't say that. No. I wouldn't say that yet. I think. Now, I think what we saw week one is not what is going to happen the rest of the season.
Better? Yeah, I know.
Now, did you see that? Where am I going to find
wide
that?
Wide open that Marvin didn't get?
I saw that one as well. I think that's a bit misleading because I do not think it was that wide open when Kyler was looking at him and Kyler had any chance of getting him the ball.
I think Kyler was scrambling when he was wide open,
I think as the season goes on, he probably gets a bit more involved with the offense and whatnot. But I actually was talking about Nabbers here. I saw one thing about Nabbers, and I'm trying to find it, like, really quick. That was basically, like, the difference between... Yeah, there it is. Plays to Malik Nabbers for the Giants are plus 4.1 EPA. All other Giants plays ended up with minus 20.7 EPA.
Yeah. Nabbers is the best wide receiver on that team, and it's not even close. And he's probably the best wide receiver in this class.
He had 3.9 yards per separation against the Vikings. That's the eighth most around, that's eighth amongst all wide receivers entering Monday night. So I think he's going to be very good. And the thing, I never said that he wasn't going to be good. I drafted him a few places. I just think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be better.
Yeah.
And I still think that. One guy that I was definitely wrong on, and you can call me out on that one, was Brian Thomas Jr. The dude looks very good.
The dude did look very good.
He looks very good. There was the touchdown pass that he caught. That was great. Like, Trevor Lawrence gets the pressure. He throws one pass that even looks a bit like a whiffy pass. Like, he didn't put a whole lot of air in it. Kind of looked like a wobbly ball. Brian Thomas Jr. is like on the opposite side of the field, and he's just so fast that he immediately makes up for the difference, and he just makes the touchdown catch. Just like, dude, like when the ball gets out of Trevor Lawrence's hand, I did not think that Brian Thomas would be like possibly in the range of getting that football when it gets there, and he just like the flash, he seems to just pop out of nowhere and get that football. So, really impressive stuff. I was surprised by Brian Thomas Jr. I think by the end of the season, he could definitely be their wide receiver one, if not sooner, by like mid-season or whatnot.
He might actually already be their wide receiver one.
I mean, maybe. You look at, like, for example, last year, something that is quite fun is that last year, you had the whole Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley thing, and in Jacksonville, and it's like you always had a hard time figuring out who to start, like, because both guys, like, it's almost like as if one guy will bust, the other one will do okay. And now, like, week one, they basically have the same stat line, which is both basically sucking. So quite fun there. But yeah, like, Brian Thomas Jr., you definitely can call me out on that one. You cannot call me out on Trevor Lawrence because, again, dude banged on average. Like, they lost that game despite being up the whole game, basically.
Speaking of like, people doing bash on, Devon Achane. Devon Achane is moving up quickly. And I think the fact that Miami was giving him touches in the goal line is very telling.
It is. He also had the most snaps out of the slot, out of any running back in the league, basically, this in week one. So, I mean, the thing with Achane, like, we know that he's fast. We know that he's explosive. We know that he's a playmaker. But, it at the end of the day, it's all his injuries. Like, we know what he is in terms of a weapon. Again, I still don't think he will be able to replicate the efficiency that he had last season. I mean, he had 2.4 yards per carry this week. Now, he tatted on, like, which one was it? He had, like, he had 76 yards receiving out of 7 catches. So, that, it, of course, will make up for the lack of efficiency here. I think the more telling signs are that he got goal line carries, that Mostert only had 6 carries the whole game. But I think part of the reason why was the Dolphins were down quite a bit. And at least early in the season, I do not expect them to be down. So early into the games, so I wouldn't plan on him to get like this sort of usage in terms of the passing game.
Yeah, no. If we want to talk about someone to rake you over the coals, J.K. Dobbins. I forgot about J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, but let me just finish up this part here because there was another one that I wanted to talk about, another running back. But Travis Etienne. I mean. Travis Etienne, super highly drafted again. There was the coach talk of Tank Bigsby being more of a thing that already exists last season, to be honest. But now it's actually happening. I mean, he basically equaled the amount of touches in terms in the ground, basically, of Travis Etienne. He also performed better in those. And if I'm not mistaken, after Travis Etienne fumbled the football, which I think it was like in the goal line or something like that, Tank Bigsby actually out-touched them. I believe it was 5-3 after that. for Tank Bigsby. So, I mean, the issue with Etienne was always he is not as dynamic as people thought in the passing game. And in the goal line, he is not as efficient. He's not efficient, period. That's just it. And if Tank Bigsby can get that goal line work, plus getting this carries, just sharing basically 50 feet of carries, I think Etienne is going to suffer a lot. Tank Bigsby becomes this usable running back 3 if you went no RB, which I did in like the only money league that I did. Week 1, I tried it out there, David Montgomery and Chase Brown. I have a bid in on Tank Bigsby because I think Tank Bigsby could be something here.
I mean, he could. Like, running backs is... I'm not saying talent doesn't matter, but running backs is more about opportunity necessarily than talent. You could have the least athletic fucking running back in the world, and if he's getting 30 carries a game, then motherfucker, he's going to be fantasy relevant.
Like, yeah. And like, to be honest, like, the goal line work all went to Travis Etienne because there was no goal line work after the fumble. The passing down work also went with Travis Etienne, so the high leverage touches all still ended up with the guy. But if Bigsby can still like surprise the coaching staff, play well when he gets the ball, doesn't commit mistakes, and Travis Etienne keeps making these mistakes, keeps being inefficient in the goal line, we could see a transition here to Tank Bigsby being more used in those situations and just splitting the carries, splitting the high leverage touches. Bigsby becomes usable.
And Etienne becomes an RB2 or 3.
Yeah, basically. Like, probably both guys end up being in the top, in, like, running back 3s, because Etienne will still get the receiving work. Bigsby will get the goal line work, so evens out there. But if one of them goes down, especially if Travis Etienne, because I'm not the biggest Etienne fan, but if Etienne goes down, like, Bigsby becomes great option here. He looks a lot better than he did last season as well. So.
He does. And that's kind of the thing. Last year proved that the Jacks, you can say what you want about Trevor Lawrence being average or bad or whatever word or adjective you want to attach to him. But what Trevor Lawrence has proved is that he can run an offense well enough to have a top running back, like a running back 1, be viable in fantasy. And I do think he is good enough to support one. And in fact, he proved that with Evan Ingram in a sense. He is good enough to have one really good fantasy weapon, whether that be a tight end or wide receiver.
I mean, my point on Trevor Lawrence is, and calling him average, is that basically, like, the dude signed a, what was it, like 250? He signed a $275 million extension. And we are blaming the Jacksonville Jaguars losing on the Travis Etienne fumble, despite the fact that Trevor Lawrence, with all of that money, got 162 yards passing and did not make a big play, basically. So I just think, like, to do this bang on average, like, at this point, he had all of the hype coming out of the college, whatever, generational prospect. But at the next level, like, he has one playoff win, which was basically ended to him by the Los Angeles Chargers. And, like, last season, the excuse was the shoulder and whatnot, the injuries that he was playing through. I mean, I think he just played one of the weakest defenses that he will face all season. And he got them 162 yards passing. No big plays, and they lost the game that they were leading for most of it because the defense was actually playing solid and was locking down the Miami Dolphins. So
that is true. And in one of the best conditions, they were playing Miami.
Yeah. Like, the only disadvantage that they have when playing in Miami, especially like early in the season, is the whole thing that they do with like Miami seats being Miami usually has the seats in the shade, and they put the opposition in the seats just taking all of the sun. No cooling, no whatsoever, and they are just like sitting there sweating their balls off. So that's the one big disadvantage that they have at this time. I'm surprised you haven't taken a victory lap on your guy. But before you do that, I guess I will ask you what happened to your Bengals.
Ineptitude.
I mean,
we just I'm gonna go on multiple tangents on this because I'll save the game tangent for the game show. But the Patriots, if you would have told me Bill Belichick was still coaching the Patriots without, you know, the knowledge that it was Jerod Mayo, and you just took a game yesterday and last year, Bill Belichick game, I'd have said I'd agree with you. I would have said it looked like the same team. It really does look like the same fucking team with the same strengths and the same weaknesses. And they just play really solid. They're not flashy. And that's kind of the thing. The people who projected the Patriots to be a bottom five offense, it's probably going to happen. They don't take any risk.
I watched part of that game. I could not tell you a single wide receiver that stood out to me. They all looked like dudes, just like random dudes.
Yeah, pretty much.
From the tight end to the wide receiver.
I think
Thornton had a good catch.
Thornton had a good catch. Yeah, Thornton was probably the closest thing that I saw to breakout wide receiver, if you can call that one.
And for those of you who have not paid attention to the stats, he had two catches for 27 yards.
Yeah.
So, not great. Like, no one in this offense is usable.
But we didn't want to win the game. We just kept giving them opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and they just...
If I'm not mistaken, I think I saw a stat that last season you guys had three fumbles the whole season. You had
pretty sure we had that game. Last game. Yeah. I was gonna say I know it's close.
No, you had three last season. You had two this.
Bringing
game,
it back to fantasy, Zach Moss is the obvious running back. I think Zach Moss did have a few good plays, like the screen. I remember he looked really impressive on the screen, and a third and one that he just punched it through, but there's just something that feels like it's missing with the run game.
I read some reports. None of them were like from confirmed sources, the usual sources that you would usually look up for.
Chase Brown didn't look good at all, by the way, but go on.
Yeah, like Chase Brown looked bang average. Like I was hoping for a spark of
painfully
some sorts from him. Like
painfully
he
average.
Looked yeah, just shit. I think running back is definitely an issue for them. Like, they got, like, 60... I think they got 70 yards between Burrow, Zach Moss, and Chase Brown. So, and like, Zach Moss, we know from last season and from years prior that he is an NFL running back, but he's nothing more than that.
I think he's just good in spurts. He's just good in, like, small little spurts, but not a whole
game. Yeah, if he's used like a change of pace back or back coming in relief of a running back one for like 3-4 games due to an injury, he is a very solid running back. He is a very good running back two to have in your team. But as a running back one, that seems like you're asking for it. But again, I did see some reports that said that they saw some swelling on Burrow's throwing wrist that he injured last season. Now, I do not know how accurate that was, because if I'm the coaching staff for Joe Burrow and the Bengals, and I see that, I would probably tend to either sitting him or just decrease the amount of passing plays. But if you look at the pass run chart, they were still fairly heavy in terms of passing. They have, if I'm not mistaken, they have 12 runs versus 29 passes. Now, I understand they were down for most, if not all, of the game. But still, I would probably expect that. So I am not sure how accurate those reports were of the swelling. Plus, like, there were no reports during camp and whatnot and practices in that regard. So, like, I'm fairly certain that they have to report that.
I'm not gonna lie. Another thing that surprised me, I was really surprised that in a game where it was uncertain if Ja'Marr Chase was going to play, he ended up playing. But in a game where it was uncertain if Ja'Marr Chase was playing and T. Higgins was out, that Jermaine Burton didn't see a single target. That's crazy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of surprising. Was he active as well?
I think he was, yes.
Okay. Because I remember that at least, like, Yoshi was. From the reports that I read.
Had a few good plays. He did.
Yeah, but like from the reports that I read through camp, he was at least ahead of Baker. But I didn't read anything in terms of like Trenton Irwin, for example, being ahead of him. I understand Charlie Jones getting some usage over Baker purely because he is the returner. But like that's only if Burton wasn't active. If he was active, like I would at least hope for him to make some sort of a dent.
He had 8% snap share, so yes, he ran routes. Okay. It was like
he was around. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I did read some reports that he wasn't picking up the playbook fast enough, and that's why he was behind Yoshivas.
He's still raw. He's still raw. But here's the thing: he's 23 years old. You don't have that much. You don't have that much time to be raw, dude.
Yeah, that's true as well. And like the game conditions weren't even that bad, if I'm not mistaken. I think I read somewhere. In terms of like the pressure, I don't think he was pressured all that much. He was pressured at the third lowest rate of his entire career.
The Bengals offensive line looked the best it's looked in a while, and they still couldn't move the ball. That was actually kind of depressing. I'm not gonna lie. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, the red flag here is the 5.6 yards per attempt with no pressure whatsoever in his face. Like, when he didn't get pressured, he only got 5.6. Now, maybe they are dialing back the playbook a bit because of the soreness, because they don't want to push him at 100% right now because of that risk. They want to take it slow. Maybe that's all part of the plan, and they want to ramp up. We talked about it in the last episode that they are usually a team that starts slow. But I don't know, like, this feels like an issue right now. It's week one, let's not overreact, but it still looks like an issue. So maybe it improves when T. Higgins is back, though.
If it improves when T. Higgins is back, they kind of have to pick T. Higgins.
Yeah, probably. Probably. I'll just say I was probably wrong on the Panthers, but I might have been right on the Falcons not being a lit. So take your victory lap on your guy.
Which guy? Derek Carr?
Derek Carr, yeah.
Yeah, he looks great. Dude, like, much better than Geno Smith, obviously. You know, that I mean, I didn't think I had to explain that, but apparently, like 3 or 4 episodes ago, I did have to explain how Derek Carr was better than Geno Smith for whatever reason. But
given Geno Smith actually faced a defense that I think will be good, I am not sure what I will call the Carolina Panthers either side. I'm not sure if that's a football team yet or if Panthers that's a CFL team.
The Panthers might be cursed. I think the most concerning thing was Olave had like the quietest of the quiet days. Like, what did he have? Receptions for 11 yards on 2 targets.
And because we are in a fantasy show, and I mentioned my team before, the Money League team. I was super pumped for this team that I built in the Money League. Because I mean, running backs, it was Chase Brown, David Montgomery. I took some dart throws at Trey Benson, Kamani Vidal, some AJ Perine to have in the bench. And my idea is to just run Montgomery and like a rotation of running backs at the two. But then my wide receiver room, I was super pumped because I had Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Puka Nacua, and Drake London.
Oh, Lord.
And I was looking pretty for.
Remember when you thought Drake London was like worth Justin Jefferson? I remember when you thought that.
Despite that, my QB is Jaden Daniels, so I have a running chance. I need Garrett Wilson to outscore Brandon Ayuk by 13 points. 12 and change.
That's going to be hard after the Jets get sacrificed. Maybe it will. Maybe the 49ers will get up so much that they just pass, 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 and Garrett Wilson ends up with a better day.
Like, the report is that Brandon Ayuk is going to have a reduced workload in week one because he did sit out basically
preseason,
everything. So he set out camp, preseason, everything. So I'm banking on that at least, but I need Garrett Wilson to do something for me here. But yeah, like you mentioned Chris Olave. Chris Olave did jack all because he didn't need to. Like, they got a deep pass to Rashid Shaheed. That went for a touchdown. Then Kamara murdered them in, like, the running game. He had, like, 5.5 yards per carry. He got a touchdown. Then in the passing game, he got 5 catches. So, I mean, it just went off on them.
Yeah. Ironically, the Panthers getting rolled didn't involve Chris Olave rolling them, which actually makes it even worse for the Panthers, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, you know, it's good when Chris Olave got 2 catches for 11 yards and his longest 17 yards. So he effectively got a catch for minus 6 yards, which is always fun, huh? but yeah, like, they did nothing. That offense looked atrocious. The running backs were sort of like one point that some people were targeting because the idea was that Miles Sanders was dusted.
Jonathan Brooks is going to be atrocious.
Brooks is out. But the idea was right now that you would draft Chuba Hubbard late, and he would be the starter for, like, the weeks until Jonathan Brooks is not back. But even that isn't working, because although he did get, like, 2 drives to 1 for Miles Sanders, so that's the rotation that I saw, every 2 drives, Miles Sanders would come in for a drive. It was still so bad, and the drives with Chuba Hubbard were so short, like 3 and outs, basically, that they still ended up with the same amount of carries, basically. It was 5 to 6. So, yeah, that was absolutely atrocious. Bryce Young looked terrible. No one in that offense looked passable. The defense looked god-awful as well. So, yeah, I might have been wrong on the Panthers. But I was right on the Falcons not being, like, all that and what people thought. And my rationale last episode, if you remember, was if the Falcons aren't this, like, juggernaut of a team that people are making them out to be, not they got Cousins, there's value on other teams to win the South. And the Falcons effectively did not look like a juggernaut. Kirk Cousins did not look like a QB that could even move in the pocket. He had 2 interceptions. One of the more alarming things as well was the fact that he basically only ran snaps in, like, shotgun, for example, or pistol. It didn't run anything from under the center. They didn't have any sort of play action, nothing like that. Things that Kirk Cousins has done well in the past. They completely took that out of the playbook. I'm not sure if that's because they realized that he's not 100% yet back from the Achilles injury. He still doesn't have his mobility back. But that offense looked rough. Or maybe it's just that the Steelers defense, that, like, to me, the probably one of the best groups that I saw this Sunday was the Steelers defense. Like, no doubt, that defense looked gross, man. Dude. That looked...
Imagine if they had a quarterback.
Yeah, imagine if they had a quarterback that passed for over 160 yards. Can you just imagine that? They got 18 points scored. None of them was... That one, you can say that none of them were from the offense. They had 6 field goals. That's it.
Crazy.
And you know, when you can see that it's a Arthur Smith offense?
What, Cordell Patterson is getting rushes? Yes, that is.
No. You did not notice this because Pickens had an actual decent game. He got 6 catches for 85 yards.
He had half the fucking but
he got out-snapped by Van Jefferson.
Oh my God.
Van Jefferson played more snaps than George Pickens. If I'm not mistaken, I have the number here somewhere. If I'm not mistaken, George Pickens was on the field for around... here he is. 67% of the snaps. So Van Jefferson was over that. I believe he was in the high 70s. If you remember, the Atlanta Falcons did trade for Van Jefferson from the Los Angeles Rams.
Yes, I remember.
So that's just the love relationship that Arthur Smith has.
Where's Jonnu Smith? Why hasn't he signed yet?
He is with the Miami Dolphins. And not doing a whole lot so far.
He's on the wrong team.
Man. The offense, I expect it to be a bit better with Russell Wilson. Because, again, I still think he's a better QB than Justin Fields. But I don't know, man. I think the defense is going to do a whole lot of the work there.
Yeah, this might be the best defense in the fucking... This might be the Browns defense from last year. This might be the Browns defense from last year.
I mean, the Browns defense... Yeah, maybe. Maybe. If only the Browns still have that defense, because that's probably the only thing that's going to save that team. Because the offense ain't doing that. And what do you do with the Cleveland Browns assets?
Dump them in a dumpster and set it on fire?
I know a lot of people were sort of high on Amari Cooper. He did get 9 targets, only 2 catches, though. Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun looks bad. He looks like generationally bad.
Again, in terms of EPA per play, he was the second worst QB so far on the week. He looked goddamn atrocious. The Browns really do not have an out in terms of their contracts. I went through the numbers earlier today. We'll probably talk a bit more about this in the other show. But if they were to cut him with a post-June 1st designation in the next year, so 2025, they would incur in $118 million dead cap penalty. His current cap hit for 2025 is $72 million, so they would be down $46 million. They would save some money in 2026. So I think it's likely the move is that, like, you have
eat $100 million.
$120 million to release the guy. Yeah. That's like the if you release him pre-June 1st, you have nearly $175 million dead cap penalty. The cap for 2025, I'll try to find the exact number here, but the cap for 2025 is, where is it? Cap tracker here. The cap for 2025, it's projected to be $273 million. So, some quick maths tells you that if you cut them pre-June 1st, that is 64% of your cap on a guy that is going to be playing elsewhere. Probably not going to be playing because this has gone atrociously bad. But yeah, 64% of your cap on a guy that you're going to cut.
I was watching videos.
It's not ideal.
And I forgot who it was, but it was someone talking about, maybe it was on Julian Edelman, because it was about Bill O'Brien. And Bill O'Brien was a Patriot guy. Anyway. He was talking about how when Bill O'Brien was the coach for the Texans and Deshaun was there, he tried to teach him like a pro style offense, like how the Patriots ran, and Deshaun would not take. So they actually ended up using Clemson's college playbook basically verbatim while Deshaun was in Houston. And the sentiment was Deshaun never learned to run a pro style offense. And you could see that in the Browns, because when Joe Flacco came in, because Stefanski uses a very pro-style offense. So when Joe Flacco came in, the offense ran fine. But every time Deshaun was in, it looked like it struggled because Deshaun never took the steps to learn a proper NFL offense. I don't know how true that is, but that's just what I was experiencing.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I've read some reports as well mentioning that. And like, the more glaring thing is, like, last season, they got a guy off the couch he ran an offense that was basically like a top 12, top 15 offense with all the scheme skill position players. Yeah. And like a few years ago, if you remember, Jacoby Brissett did something similar. Like when he was playing, this offense was also like a top 12, top 15 offense. So like the common denominator for them sucking is Deshaun Watson being the starting QB. And like, I don't want to be like changing the history and whatnot, like having this revisionary history thing here. But like, if you look at what Deshaun Watson did in Houston, and we thought it as this great QB and whatnot.
Yep.
Like, the dude had one really good season. That's kind of it. Like 2020, he had 4,823 yards passing, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. They were very good numbers. He rushed for 444 yards, all good. But like, year prior to that, he failed to break 4,000 yards, 12 interceptions. The year prior to that one, he had 4,000 yards as well. So it's like, it's an okay season. It's nothing like tremendous, but it's still an okay season. Like, he has never been this phenomenal QB, and then he sits out basically 2 years. He sat 2021, then he sat the most part of 2022. He only played 6 games, then last season he only played 5 games starting. So, like, it's just a mixture of maybe wasn't that great, plus the whole distraction from like his wrongdoings, basically. Plus now only playing like starting 11 games in the past 2 seasons. It's just a mix of a lot going wrong for them, and that trade is going to be looked upon as one of, if not the worst trade that a team has ever done. Especially when you factor in that they gave them the extension afterwards. And it's probably going to push back the idea that a QB can get a fully guaranteed deal a few years. Like, it's not working right here. Yeah.
Kirk Cousins looks bad, dude.
I think part of it is just the mobility. Maybe he is not 100% back. They are not running a good defense, a good offense.
I don't know, but Drake London and Kyle Pitts, they still don't look like it, dude. I don't know.
I mean, maybe, again, like I said, this could really well be a situation of the Jags prior to them being Jacksonville, in which they are like, they're going to suck another season. They're not great another season. And when they are finally going to be good, everyone will be out of them. So maybe next season is the season. Or maybe they just improve as the season goes on. At least Bijan's usage is being a bit better. Drake London had one of the worst usages of his career. I believe he had the worst or the second worst receiving share in his career. So, unless something really drastically changes in that offense, I have some doubts that they're going to be good. Tampa Bay still looks like they have not missed the beat.
I was
skeptical of them. And I think a good chunk of what we saw was the Washington Commanders defense still being as bad as they were last season, which was one of the worst defenses in the league. I still think they are goddamn atrocious. But like, I was expecting a decline in Baker in terms of like his effectiveness, how effective it was, is overall like passing yards going down, the connection with the offense in general just taking a step back. But no, I mean, he improved his connection with Godwin. He's being used more in the slot. He had the best day of any of the Tampa Bay receivers in terms of catches, yards. So he led them in all of those camps. Mike Evans is still playing great. The running back situation is a bit tricky, at least I think. Like Rashad White still got more carries than the rest of the backfield, but Bucky Irving did really well with the touches that he got, and if I'm not mistaken, he actually was more effective with the touches than Rashad White. I mean, the issue with Rashad White last season was that he got all of that work, and he wasn't effective whatsoever. Again, this past week, he got 15 carries. He only got 31 yards out of those, yards per carry of 2.1. Bucky Irving got 6.9 yards per carry on 9 carries. He got 62 yards there. So, again, if you look at the longs, Rashad White, 15 carries. His longest was 15 yards. So if you take that one out, he got 14 carries for 16 yards.
Looks bad.
Looks bad. Now, the passing game is still good. He's still getting the biggest chunk of it. He got 6 targets, got 6 carries, 75 yards. So he's making up for it there. But I could see Bucky Irving getting more involved. There were reports out of camp that he was going to get more involved. They wanted to split the carries a bit more. And so far, he's been doing good. As for the Commanders, it's Jaden Daniels is likely a top 7 QB option this season. But until further notice, it's him and Brian Robinson Jr. And, like, I want to believe in Terry McLaurin. I still think if there's one receiving option that pops out of there, it is Terry McLaurin. But the offense that they're running right now is kind of weird because the strong point of Jaden Daniels in college was his deep ball. He had this great deep ball. The rest needed a bit of work. They are not doing that. It seems like they are trying to make him do the things that he was worse at. They're trying to make him learn those things and work on those things prior to making him to letting him use his best traits, which doesn't seem ideal. You want your QB to be comfortable, especially when he is a rookie. You want him to do the things that he's good at, and they are sort of taking out all of that, and it's not really using or doing what they want him to do. Like, they want him to throw the short stuff, the intermediate stuff, but he's going one read. He's not there. He just runs, which, again, is not good for the development of a QB. He had 16 carries for 88 yards, only 184-yard passing. I'm expecting them to adjust this somewhat after they watch the tape and understand that this isn't really working in terms of the passing offense, and just go back to letting him use his best weapons, his best traits, and go from there. When he's comfortable with that and when he has that whole playbook open, then he can go for the short intermediate stuff when needed, because the offense won't be as closed out and the defense won't be as loaded up in the box as they are right now. So
McCaffrey had a few good plays.
Yeah, he looked okay. Like, the targets weren't really there. They're not going to be there.
Yeah,
I actually read from a Washington Commanders beat reporter that his thoughts for wide receiver 2 in this offense was probably Noah Brown, if Noah Brown had been there the whole training camp. Because, like, the things that he was seeing in camp, he really didn't see, like, any guy standing out for wide receiver 2.
Right.
So if you're playing redraft, I think, especially like deeper bench, deeper leagues, deeper benches, if you're playing in a 14-man league, for example, just stash Noah Brown, because I think eventually, like mid-season and whatnot, or even sooner, if they do not find like a secondary weapon here on the receiving end, he could be used a bit more, because his skill set is also quite good for what they're trying to make him do. Because he is very good in the deep game, then he's also very good in the, not very good, but he's okay, and like it's one of his best strengths is just the intermediate and the short stuff. So I think he is eventually going to be a weapon in this team. Just going to be a matter of him learning the scheme, him just learning the playbook, because he has not been there for all that long. So
I think it's time for you to go, friend.
Could be. I was just looking if there was anything else here that we needed to talk about. I'll just finish up saying the Jameson Williams breakout might finally be happening. Led the team in targets, got 9 targets, 5 catches, 121 yards receiving. long of 52 yards and a touchdown. So Jameson Williams might be happening. This was the weapon that was missing for this Detroit Lions team. Just the deep receiving weapon they had. That guy that is now... Where is he now? He went to the Broncos. Josh Reynolds. They had him last season. Mm-hmm. But Jameson Williams is just like... He is showing why he was a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. And the breakout could be happening. Like, he looked electric out there.
He did. He looked very good. 9 targets, so, too. Wow.
Led them in targets. Out-targeted the Sun God.
Amon Ross St. Brown. Wow.
So... Yep.
Outro, Alex. Might have been right on that one. More, but we gotta get you out of here, buddy. So
yeah. Time for me to go. Yeah. Okay, so guys, we're back. NFL season is back. We're gonna have 2 shows per week now. This one is gonna come out on Tuesday, so you'll be listening to this on Tuesday. The other one will probably come out on Thursday. That's likely what's going to happen going forward. Could be some changes, as there's still some stuff we're discussing. But you'll be notified of that. If you've listened this far, thank you. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast, just make sure to leave us a 5-star review. Turn on the auto downloads. Leave us a comment now that you can do that on Spotify as well. So please do that. If you're listening on YouTube, all of the things that you've been doing for the past 2 decades, just do them, please. You know what it is. If you're on Twitter, follow us at No Reserves Radio. And yeah, talk to you guys, not next week, but talk to you guys on Thursday now. Have a good one. And enjoy Monday Night Football.